Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we have a special guest. His name is Robert Ellis. He writes crime fiction. His new book, part of the Lena Gamble series, is called Murder Season, and it's out from Minotaur Books. And he's here to talk about it. Hello.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. I'm doing just fine. It's good to have you on the show.
Great to hear from you again, David.
You were one of these writers who just tells such a great story every single time. I mean, every book I read of yours, I enjoy. And how do you do that? And is it harder to do with each book?
Well, thank you first for saying that. But the truth is, I'm definitely, when I'm finished a book, I try to beat the last book. And there's no question that I try to do that. I try to make things more intense each time. And I also think that I'm still very much learning. And so, and improving, and I hope that that continues all the way to the end. With this book, I think it's the most intense in terms of character relationships and just a certain intensity that between the opposition and the hero, between Lena and the forces that be in Los Angeles. It was a very emotional experience for me to write, I have to say, especially the last half was a very intense experience to write.
Now, it's been, how many years since the last book? It's been a couple of years, right?
Two
years. So it takes you, is that about what it takes you to write a book, 2 years? I mean, is it the same?
It takes me to write a book about 4 months, but unfortunately I had some personal experiences that I had to deal with, and that's the reason for the delay.
But then there's rewrite. That doesn't count rewrites, the 4 months, though.
We don't do, there's not much rewriting with one of my books.
Really?
What I send is what you see. My editor will, in terms of story, nothing changes. This is a story about a 16-year-old girl, murder season, Lily Height, who was murdered, and her neighbor, Jacob Gant, was accused of the crime, and very much like O.J., went to trial. It was a huge media trial, and he walks out acquitted with it, scot-free. The entire city is up in arms, and this book begins, I think, 3 weeks after that verdict, and he is found murdered, shot to death in a very high-end nightclub in Hollywood. So, it just starts with a bang, and I guess my whole challenge with this story was, could I keep it going?
Mm-hmm. I'm curious as to how you make each book better. You make it better and better and better. With each book, it's going to become more of a challenge.
Well, I think if
are you up to that challenge?
If it's not a challenge, I think you should stop writing. I do think you should stop writing if it's not a challenge.
Yeah,
I think what I'm working on now is the best opening I've ever done. And then, let's see.
Yeah, I just wonder. I mean, it's like what's that the thing you do, the limbo where the bar keeps getting raised up and up and up and up, and then you think after a while you can't jump over that bar anymore.
We'll see.
How far up can you go before you get to the point where I can't get any better than I am now? or will that ever happen?
Well, you want to, you really want to give the reader a ride. There's no question that I'm really trying to do that. And I'm also very much trying to get the reader to experience what the story from the point of view of Lena Gamble. And if you look at all my books, my books are thrillers. They're not really detective fiction. They're kind of a hybrid thriller where an opponent is out in the open. There's a big, big twist at the end. There's probably maybe 10 twists toward the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that part of it. That's one of the reasons I love your books.
But the key to the story in all five books is that the hero is a very vulnerable or innocent person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key to get from me in bringing the reader in, so that you are, you know, you're very much aware of what the main character, in this case, Lena Gamble, Detective Lena Gamble from the Elite Robbery Homicide Division in Los Angeles. You're very aware of what she's thinking. If you notice, she's not always right. She's, you know, very much a completely real person. She's not drawn as a cartoon. She's not a man with a woman's name. She's just a human being who's been dealt a set of circumstances and has to find her way through it the way somebody who's very bright, someone who is, I guess what I'm trying to say is, she's going through an experience, and I want you to go through it with her. And I don't want, and I want it to be fair, and I don't want fate to play any role in the story ever. And I want you to feel like at the end of this book, you had a good time, but also that you learned something about, you know, about the world.
And that's what makes your book so good. I mean, Lena is very vulnerable, and there are points in this book where I think there's no way she's going to make it past this day.
I mean, it's just, it's, I love the characters in this book, and I really love the relationship. This book was very much a challenge because of the previous two. I don't know whether you remember signing at your store.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of readers wanted Lena to have a personal life. And they all said, you know, like, well, she should meet somebody. She should do this. Well, I agree. You know, I decided, okay, I'll do it, but I'm going to twist it and make it twisted. And I really, really like the relationship she has with another character in this book. And also, I really, really enjoyed writing the character of another homicide detective in the story, Dan Cobb.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think he's the best character. I don't know. I always kind of said this was my Shakespeare story, so...
Everything relates to Shakespeare in some way, doesn't it? There are a lot of things do.
The circumstances of Lily's murder with the houses next door to each other, which, you know, by the way, that was inspired by... The Michael Skakel case in Greenwich, Connecticut.
So all your stories are inspired by real-life things that happened?
Not necessarily inspired. Well, let's put it this way. I am inspired as a human being by certain cases where I have become incensed by what I consider an injustice. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I very much, in Murder Season, we're dealing with two cases, and they're both mentioned in the novel. And one is the Skakel case, in which Mark Furman got involved.
Oh,
and a 16-year-old girl who was murdered. You have Mark Furman getting involved. Skakel is the suspect. And then what the prosecutor did, that's what really bothered me, because when I first read the case, I thought that it wasn't Skakel at all. It could have easily been someone else,
mm-hmm.
who actually fled and has disappeared. But and I never, you know, I would never rely on anything that Mark Furman did. So, I mean, it's like...
exactly.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. You're really fascinated with true crime.
Well, inspired by the sense of injustice, and here's what the point I'm trying to make is, when the prosecutor got to his closing argument against Skakel, he took audio from Skakel talking about, you know, fantasies he had, sexual fantasies with the victim, and he recut it to make it look like, to make it sound like he was talking about murdering her. And then he used pictures of the girl's dead body to go with that audio. So it was completely created, a complete work of fiction. And that's what the jury saw. And the judge, whom I think who would allow that, has got to be an idiot. You know what I mean? And then on appeal, another judge said it was okay as well. So I just, you know, the idea of a detective getting it wrong, of somebody, going to being prosecuted who is actually or may be very well may be innocent. Yeah, it's actually something that has turned up in my stories quite often. I think The Dead Room dealt with that a little bit too.
I wish The Dead Room was available in paperback for people, because that's a book I'd love to be able to sell over and over again. It's such a terrific. Every one of your books is terrific. I mean, when I started reading Murder Season, I thought, uh-oh, I don't know if I'm going to like this one. And all of a sudden, I love it. Every book of yours that I read, I love. And you're just one of those authors that I never seem to dislike.
I'm hoping that at some point we can bring Dead Room back as a paperback.
Yeah, it is. I mean, a lot of people, I'll tell people to read it, and then I'll be like, oh, wait a minute, it's not available. I can't get them to read it.
It is an e-book now, but it's a different thing.
So you can read it on e-book, but it's, yeah. I mean, you're just so good at what you do. Now, you used to write for movies or TV, or what did you write for before?
Actually, the way I got started was I was writing screenplays, mm-hmm. and I had made a video with a friend of mine for the Today Show on the Challenger disaster.
Oh,
and
wow.
we were using a soundtrack from David Bowie, Space Oddity.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and I was in negotiations with him in New York, and that he had found out that I studied with Walter Tevis, who wrote The Hustler, The Color of Money, and The Man Who Fell to Earth, which was Bowie's favorite film.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in it, obviously. And so I gave him a screenplay that I was very happy with. It was my second screenplay, and he loved it. And I got signed, and I moved out to California and started writing screenplays. And I ghostwrote Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4, just sort of the final draft before shooting. And I was trying to sell my screenplays, and I had written the screenplay for Access to Power, which I thought was going to go. And, a director was signed. Everything was, like, in a go position.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, films are hard to get, you know, they can fall apart at any moment. And that one did, and I had just, I had just gone to a signing with Michael Conley at Venice Beach. It was a wonderful bookstore, and he had just written, he was Trunk Music.
Right. Mm.
And, we had a chance to talk, and the next day I went, I went home, and the next day I started to see if I could turn the screenplay Access to Power into a novel. And I did, and it sold, and that's how it all started.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you haven't gone back to written any more screenplays then? Did you give up on screenplays?
No. I wrote a bunch of screenplays, but, you know, you write them and, you know.
It's such an iffy business. I mean, the whole Hollywood movie business, you know, you never know what's going to take off and what's going to be popular one day is not the next.
Right.
What a crazy world. I mean, and now you have much more room to create. I mean, you can create anything you want.
Well,
basically.
Yeah, I mean, once you start writing novels, I don't know how it'd be tough for me to go back, because the experience of a novel is, you know, a screenplay is a blueprint of a story. And you really need to be a storyteller to write a good screenplay. And many a novelist has been saved by a good screenwriter when their novel wasn't that great, but the film turned out to be wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, the act of writing a novel, first of all, it's the most intense experience in fiction that there is. I mean, reading a novel or writing one, I mean, you're in the character's heads, you know what people are thinking, it's, you know, you're up all night, you know what I mean?
Right, absolutely.
It gets much deeper inside the human psyche.
Is it, would you consider it torturous for you?
What?
writing the book? I mean, actually, you know, deciding what to put in the book, what how to write it, and I mean, you seem to have a feel of what to do. I mean, you seem to know what you're doing all the time.
I love it. I love it.
And it's and never, but you do stay awake at night. I mean, there are nights where you can't sleep because you don't know what to do next. I mean, that does happen.
Oh no.
Never, huh?
No, I mean the intensity of the story. You want to keep reading. You want to keep going. You can't stop thinking about it. That kind of thing.
Oh, I see.
You know, living it.
But you love all of that stuff.
Yeah. I love it.
I can hear it in your voice how much you love it.
No, I love it. Yeah.
What, Lena Gamble, now, this you said this is book five, right?
Yes.
Are there going to be 25 Lena Gamble books?
Actually, until I write another, it's a trilogy. The next book is not a Lena Gamble book.
Oh, it's not?
No.
Oh, boy, that's a shock to hear.
Yeah, and nobody knows that either.
Well,
I don't know whether I should say it.
Oh, well, maybe you should. It's a little hard now. We've already said it. You can't take that one. Well, no, I'm. You know, I trust you with anything you write, so it doesn't matter to me. I mean, I will miss Lena, of course, but Lena's going to be back, though.
I sure hope so. I love writing her.
Uh-oh, you're not even sure about that.
Yeah, well, I don't, you know, let's see what happens. I mean, because I'm writing about a character who is in her world, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He's a homicide detective in Los Angeles, so he's in her world, and there's a crossover in some of the characters. So, in other words, people from the coroner's office are the same as would be with Lena. Everything is—it's just as if we've moved across town, and there's another character at work.
So, why did you decide to do that? I'm curious.
I've been wanting to write this book for a long time, and I'm just going to do it.
It's been in you for a while. It's been bugging you to get out, huh?
Yeah, and the opening is just awesome.
Well, now you got me curious. You can't do that to me and not tell me what the opening is.
That's all you get. No.
Well, that's cruel to do that to your fans. You know, now they're wondering, what's he talking about? I wish I could read that book, you know. And well, eventually we're going to get to read it, right?
That's right.
But the opening may be changed by then.
I don't think so.
But it sounds like it's going to stay the way you're talking about it, like it's the best thing you've ever written. How do you know when something's the best thing you've ever written?
Well, I have to say, I think Murder Season is the best book I've ever written, and my editor thinks it too. Her opinion is that I'll never top it. I mean, she really, you know, and I don't know whether you...
Was that a real concern, that you'll never top this Murder Season?
Oh, no, because I don't believe that, but, you know, she thinks she's real, you know... Everybody just seems to really love this book. I mean, Well, you know what happens.
Oh, yeah, I love the book, absolutely. I mean, this is one of those books I read and I finish, and I think I can't wait to talk to him now. I just can't wait to talk about the book with him, even though we can't tell everybody who's listening what anything major that happens in the book because it would spoil things. It's just one of those books that you just enjoy, and you can't wait to tell the author. That's what's so wonderful about what I do. I get to tell the author how much I enjoy their books and listen to their reaction.
Well, you know, one of my favorite things about this book, one is sort of the maturity of some of the relationships that Lena had made in earlier books. One of my favorite chapters is the chapter with Buddy Palladino,
mm-hmm.
who's been, you know, the defense attorney. You know, Lena is drawn in gray, and she has, you know, nothing about her moral world is black and white. And she has friends from the other side, you know, like Buddy Palladino. And she did a favor for him in The Lost Witness. And there's a great chapter with him. And one of the best chapters in the book, I think, is with him. I think that the one of the pleasures, I like to look at the characters as an orchestra and make sure that we have somebody from sort of every part of society. I love the chapter where she's with the musician producer in the ghetto in South LA. I don't know. It was a pleasure to write. It was a very intense emotional experience to write. And
euphoria. It sounds like it's euphoric almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to know that what you're writing is really good and people are really going to want to read it. I mean, that's...
This one really just clicked all the way through, I thought.
That's what interests me about you. You don't seem very neurotic about things. You're not worried constantly that somebody's not going to like something or your editor's not going to like what you're writing. You seem very confident in yourself, and I like that.
They've been great to me, Minotaur, and I think, I don't know whether we spoke about this, but they don't do a lot of, the editing is very, very light.
Mm-hmm.
I like to write conversationally. I like to write the way we would think instead of, or as speech instead of language. I like to just sort of create a flow, a rhythm, and keep you sort of. I think that's another reason why the stories are so intense, and that is you are so in her mind because of the way it's written.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it's not language, it's speech, it's, I don't know.
Now, is there really a term that they use called murder season? Is that a term they use in police?
It might be.
You mentioned it on the first page of the book.
Yes. And I do believe that that there are certain months where crime, the hot months, when the heat rolls in, that the murder rate climbs. And I don't know whether, I can't say whether it's a term that they use or a term that I used.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So it's one of the things with murder season. It's such a great title too. I mean, it's one of those titles that really works.
I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, you hear a title and sometimes you think, oh, that doesn't sound really good, and other times you know that it sounds perfect.
I wish I could take credit for it, but my editor can take credit.
I know one thing though: Joe Drabiak would have loved this book. That I'm certain of.
Well, I'll tell you. He knew because I was working on it, and he knew what was. He just said, "Keep going, keep going, keep going."
Yeah, is that what he said?
Well, the books, yes.
Tell me what you and I know him, but tell the audience what he meant to you.
Joe, beyond the fact that he was the first person that I met in this business who was a stranger, took me in and showed me the way, kind of. Joe and I just became great friends. We later learned that we had known each other back when each of us worked at a nightclub in Bryn Mawr called the Main Point.
Hmm.
And we didn't know it. I walked in with access to power to your store and said hello, and we became friends ever since. But what Joe really was for me also, more professionally, was that he was one of, and this book is dedicated to both these people.
Right.
These are the two people I talked the story about. And they're really the only two people that I do talk story about. So if I'm working on a book, and I wonder about a situation or can we pull this off in a story or whatnot, it was Joe that I could talk to about it. And Joe knew more about story than
So he would actually tell you, look, this doesn't work or this works or.
No, we would just discuss.
You would discuss. He wouldn't. He wasn't sort of an editor for you or anything. He just.
No, it was very much just theory.
Mm-hmm.
It might not even be about my book. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, it isn't about my stuff. A lot of people don't want to look at other, you know, work critically. And they don't want to discuss it because they don't want to offend anyone.
Right, absolutely.
And so you really do, as a writer, need to look at things critically, because that's how you learn.
And it makes it hard for me, because I love to talk about what I like and what I don't like. It is fun to say, look, I don't like that writer. I don't like the way he's writing. I don't like... But you're right. You don't want to hurt the person's feelings. So it's that's why book groups are so great, because you can say whatever you want, and the authors aren't there, and they're never going to hear what you're saying.
Well, exactly. But the thing is, you can't say that to anyone in the business.
No.
Professionally and stuff.
I mean, we all have our opinions, and sometimes when people agree with me, I feel really good about that.
Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah.
I mean, it's a great feeling to know that I'm not the only one that has a problem with certain books. But I never have a problem with your books. I always enjoy reading your books. And I'm not just saying that because I'm interviewing you. I'm saying it because it's really true.
I think it's great. We really have broken through in Europe right now. And so I'm really hoping the wave will move to the United States.
And now, how many countries is this book going to be published in, Murder Season? And how many were the other published in?
I can't... I think that the translation level of my work combined is about, you know, it's on the website, and I don't have it in front of me, but I think it's maybe 10, 12 languages.
That's wonderful.
Maybe 15, but we're read in 30, I have on the website 30 countries, it's now 35, and...
Are you a major success in your mind?
Not yet here in the States, but in Europe, yeah. In Germany, we were on the bestseller list for 4 months this summer.
That's
just pounding.
I'm not amazed because they're not great. They are great. I'm amazed because I didn't know that. And, you know, it's like they say, Ian Rankin is huge overseas. He's like the John Grisham overseas. But you know, in America, you don't hear him discussed as much, or at least I don't. But.
Right. In Switzerland, Denmark, all the Scandinavian countries, and that may be, you know, they were a major reason for Lena being a multi, you know, becoming a series.
Mm-hmm.
That was a major reason. It was their request.
But with this, with the Lena Gamble series, is there going to be a beginning, middle, and end? I mean, do you know the ending of the series in your mind, or is it... I mean, could it still possibly be 25 books? I mean, that's still possible.
Well, you're trying to get me to say something. We already talked about
it. No, I'm just wondering. I'm just trying to get out of you how long the series is going to be. That's all. I guess I'm curious.
I don't. I have no idea. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that leaves the reader. I mean, that's good, because now I get to... I know there's going to be more. In my mind, I know there's going to be more. I think, and you know, you don't know where it's going to end. Maybe that's a good thing.
Right. I'm gonna finish this new book, and then I'll think about that. You know what I mean? But I, you know, one of the reasons I want to write this is I have a... and one of the things that I loved about Lena in City of Fire was the fact that she was working her first case. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
She was so green and so vulnerable. And as a writer, you can do a lot when you have that kind of thing going.
Absolutely.
So, but...
And there's a certain mystique about the authors. You know, as fans, we want more and more and more, because we enjoy what we read, and we know that every book we get from you is going to be a great book, because you're good at what you do. You're really good at what you do. And I mean, you have a lot of talent. It's obvious from reading all your books how much talent you really have. So we trust you no matter what you do. Now, if one book you wrote was totally different and didn't work at all, then we'd be upset. But I trust you enough that that's not going to happen.
Well, we've got to get the word out.
So,
because, you know, I think that's really all it is right now.
Yeah, you know? it really is. Now, what kind of a book tour are you doing for Murder Season? How many different stores are you going to?
It's hard because the book's coming out in December, so you've got the holiday season.
Right.
So you're very limited. I'm going to go to California, and I'm doing the mystery bookshops from Thousand Oaks, Pasadena, Orange, and San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to come back east, come to Chester County Books, and then it's, you know, Christmas is on.
Right.
So it's very, you know.
And what a great Christmas present murder season will be.
I hope people.
I hope it's all under all the trees. If people are smart, they'll buy it for their people who love these police. Now you, it's interesting that you say this is a thriller. Are you resistant somehow to it being a mystery? Because I think of it as a mystery too. Does that bother you that I think of it that way?
Well, I don't think it is, but yeah, I mean, it's a hybrid.
You disagree with me.
Well, you know, it's a bookseller who a lot of people call them police procedurals.
Does that term bother you too?
Yeah, well, they're not really. That's the thing. The difference between a detective story and a thriller is that a detective story is a mystery in which there are many suspects, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the detective is usually, you know, somebody with some experience.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
In a thriller, you have in a detective story, the opponent is hidden, okay? And that's what makes them so much fun, you know, to write and mm-hmm. hard to write. I would say that I'm a hybrid thriller in the sense that yes, there is a mystery, it is a detective story, but my hero, my detective, is vulnerable. Okay.
If she weren't, she wouldn't be any fun to read.
Right, but you couldn't stick an experienced detective in one of my stories.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Because they're personal stories, and if you look at like Hitchcock movies, or you know, it's always the innocent man,
right?
And there are fewer suspects. There's an opponent. I always have an opponent out in the open. He may not be the main opponent, but there's somebody out there that's giving Lena a hard time and is scary.
And we don't know who it is.
We do know who it is, but we don't know who the main one is.
Oh, I see.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So there is a difference. I mean,
this is going really deep now.
Well, I know.
And it's good. It's interesting. I find it fascinating how the way your mind works.
Lena has so much conflict. She's up against the wall. You know, she's up against the wall with the police department. She's up against the wall with somebody who's angry with her for what she's doing. She's up against the wall for all these things.
But she's still not afraid to do what's right.
That's right. That's it. That's why she's such a great character. that's why she's such a great character.
And to what length she's going to do. And she's not, and that's what, you know, that's what, I've got all these things going through my mind, but it is. You're right. She's just such a good character. I mean, I could bring this up. You may get upset at me, but I think of a show like The Closer on TV, and your books are so much better because the way they portray things on TV is so regimented. I mean, everything's the same way with every show. But with your books, we never quite know where it's going. We never quite know where you're going to go next with us.
You picked one of the better shows, though. You'd have to admit that.
Right. Well, better shows. It used to be the better show. Now, the last couple seasons, it's been...
I'm not a follower of it, but
right.
One of mine is.
But, yeah, I mean, the thing with the show is that the characters are not that interesting. They have little points where they are, but overall, they're not the most interesting characters, in my mind.
Did you see The Killing on AMC?
Yeah, The Killing's terrific.
Yeah.
Terrific.
I think the reason is that Lena cannot, she's drawn in gray, she's real. She's never going to have the confidence that these let's talk about just TV in general.
Right.
Female detectives, they're either cartoon, or they're written as men. They're tough. You have a new—I don't even know what the name of it is—on NBC. I refuse to watch it, but she's so tough.
Prime Suspect, I think you're talking about.
It's just—I would never. Lena could never. You'd never ever enjoy the book if that's the way she was. She has to be like you and me, and that is that up against all that opposition.
Well, are there things about Lena we still don't know? The readers I'm talking about. You, I'm sure you know everything in your mind, but maybe you don't. I mean, are there things about her we don't know?
Well, you don't know until you do another story.
I see.
Yeah.
So the answer is maybe.
Well, the answer is yeah, of course there are things we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that, she's growing. She's growing with every case. She's growing.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, though, as an author, when you create a character like this, do you... Obviously, you don't know everything about her. You've just said that. But, I mean, do authors take characters and write everything on a blackboard that they know about the character or are going to know and then put them into put a little bit of aspect of each one in each book? But you obviously don't do that.
No, I don't.
Because you, from book to book, you don't know what you don't know. When you start a book, you don't know how that book's going to go, do you? Does it play out as you write it, or do you know the whole book before you even write it?
Oh, I know the ending for sure. I do outline. Yeah, I do a lot of research. I work with two wonderful detectives from the Los Angeles Police Department. I work with their crime lab. I work with a pathologist. So yeah, I really every single thing that happens in my books is either real or it has been fudged, but I knew it what was real before I fudged it, so I made a story decision, and I'm letting you, I sided maybe on the side of the story, but at least we started out real, yeah.
But do you remember all these details in your mind, or do you have to keep a notebook or something so you can go back and look at that over and over again?
I have, thousands of Post-its.
I'd love to see your office sometime.
Things jotted down in the middle of the night. you get an idea. I've got hundreds of pages of notes. One thing I do is I keep a journal on every book. And every day, as I'm thinking about the story, I make entries and I think through certain, the process of the story.
Right.
And that's how I develop it, is in that journal.
That's really cool. Just to think about all the different things like that.
And then what I'll do is when it's time to write, I combine, whatever outline I've developed with the, I'll go through the journal and just cut and paste stuff out and, try to, put it into the right chapters and places and decide where I'm going to do stuff. So that in the end, it's a little bit organized.
See, man, that's what makes you such a good writer. Your endings are always good; they always make sense. I've read so many books that I get to the end and the ending just is muddled. It doesn't make any sense. It's like they just slap the ending on to get the book done. And you never want to feel as a reader that you're reading a book that was slapped together just to get it published.
Oh, I agree.
And you know it when you read it. And there are certain authors that have been accused of that. I'm not going to name any names because I have my own opinions and everybody else has their own opinions. But
right.
There are books like that. And it makes me very angry, especially if the ending doesn't make any sense.
Well, I'll tell you, the ending of this one pops. And it's one of the main reasons I wrote the story was to have that ending.
Mm-hmm.
So...
But do you leave clues along the way?
Oh, of course. That's the whole beauty of it is that.
But then it sounds to me like it's a mystery novel. The way you say that, because mystery novels have clues that lead to the solution.
That's why I call it a hybrid.
Oh, a hybrid. Okay.
Yeah, it's a hybrid.
I'm getting old, I think. I forget what you said 20 minutes ago.
That's the way to really do a kick-ass ending is to have it to reach a point in the story where the ultimate opponent is really the only person it could have been, but no one thought of him.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that it's all there if you read it the second time around, but it's not there at all in the first read. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's interesting. That sort of reminds me of like the movie The Sixth Sense, where you see everything the second time that you didn't see the first time.
That film made a huge impression on me because that film turns on a dime, and that is my goal as a writer every time out, is that I want the story to turn on a dime.
And you're confident you can do that for the next 10 books. You could do that every time.
I saw that movie between writing Access to Power and The Dead Room. And my goal for Dead Room was definitely, and if you ever read that story again, you'll see it. You can tell I saw that film because there's no question that I'm trying to turn. Something happens and the whole reality changes. And that's the beauty of crime fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that you've built this reality, which is the visible world. You've built the reality, which is what the killer wants you to see. You've built another reality, which is what it could be. And then you turn everything on a dime at the end, and it's what the world really is. And, wow.
Exactly. That's sort of like, and Agatha Christie was very good at that, too.
Hey.
I mean, she
a master.
No, she was. I mean, you would think you knew everything that was happening in the book. Now some people have said to me, "Well, she didn't make it really realistic." But I loved the way she did it. I will always love the way she did it. I don't have any problems saying I'm an Agatha Christie fan. I think she did that very well. I mean, no, her books are not perfect. You know, there's always room for improvement, I think, on some books. I mean, she wrote so many books. I mean, you're bound to write one that didn't work quite as well as others.
Right.
Now, with you, I haven't found one that didn't work, but you know, who knows? Down the line, you never know. I mean, I could react very adversely to one of your books. I hope I never do. And
right.
I'm confident that I'm not going to, but... And I know... Because I know you know what you're doing. And you seem to have a really good idea of what's going to work and what isn't going to work.
Well, thank you so much for saying that.
Well, it's obvious from reading your books. I mean, how enjoyable they are, and you know, I trust you have to trust authors in a certain level,
right?
And there have been series that I read and I will continue to read, even though I realize that some of their books were just awful. But I like the characters, and that's the thing. If you like the characters enough, you'll still read even if the book isn't as good in some authors. But with your books, we don't have to worry about that. We get everything we want from your books. We get that sense of Lena being in really, really horrible danger. I mean, is she going to survive this chapter?
I know. I really, in terms of characters, Murder Season, I think, my favorite in terms of the cast of this story. There's just so many people want so many different things in this story, and it's just it was a real pleasure to write.
And the interesting thing is, you know, usually you have a woman writer, they write women characters. You're a man writing a woman character.
Yeah.
And do people think that's unusual? What do readers say to you about that? I mean, I think it's great. You do it really well.
Well, Thomas Harris did it, you know.
With Clarice, yeah.
Yeah, and if you notice, thrillers, female characters are made for thrillers because they carry with them an extra vulnerability that a male character doesn't necessarily have. With a male character, you have to build it in. If you looked at The Dead Room, it was built in to Teddy because he was just out of law school, okay, and then had, was confronted with this horrible murder case.
Right.
With Lena, she had, in City of Fire, she's not only is she female, but in a male world of cops, okay, mm-hmm. at the time, you know, there wasn't all this female stuff, you know, there weren't as many female detectives out there.
Well, could you do what you do with Lena so well with a man? Could you write a man character like this and make them just as interesting?
Well, I think Teddy was close to it, but I think what I'm working on right now will be, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's exciting.
Yeah, no, he's very, very...
But are you saying that it's harder to write a vulnerable male character than it is a female one?
It's not harder, it's different.
Is it as much fun?
You have to build more in.
Right. Is it as much fun as what you're doing with Lena?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, I love it.
I'm curious. I mean, everything you have to understand it as a fan. When you like an author that much, you love to ask them these questions. You know, there's so many questions. And
well, this is how Lena came into existence. I had written The Dead Room, which is Teddy Mack, a kid right out of law school who's forced to work to defend someone who everyone thinks is a serial killer. The book, you know what happened to that book.
Mm-hmm.
That was sort of an underground hit. You know, and like people, I was getting calls and lots of stuff was going on.
Right.
So I figured if Teddy was ever going to meet a woman, he needed to meet a woman who had been through the same ordeal he had. So I wrote City of Fire.
Right.
We showed it around, and the publishers here and in Great Britain and in Germany said, we love this, but we want three. And that's how it happened. And people just fell for her. And you can look at the quote by Michael Conley on City of Fire. I mean, he fell for her.
Right. I wonder why they said they want three. That's interesting. Publishers are so, you know, you never know what they're going to say next, what they're going to want. I mean, I mean, a lot of it I know today is, you know, how much can we sell? How can we sell this book? Well, I mean, your books are easy to sell. They're terrific. And you read it and enjoy it. You're going to have a great time reading it. And you always do.
Well, something clicked with her. It took me 6 weeks of practice to find her voice because I realized that, that actually, and this goes back to your question a few minutes ago, actually, writing a woman was much more difficult for me because...
You're not a woman, first of all.
But also, in terms of her strength,
yeah.
if I gave her the emotions I gave Teddy, it didn't work.
But you didn't find somebody who was like Lena in real life and ask them what they've gone through and use that. Lena's all in your mind, right?
Because of what I did in film, I have had the pleasure of working with lots of women and lots of women, female producers. You know, when you're shooting something like a commercial or whatnot, you are a team. You're working together toward a common goal. It's sort of like, you know, being trench warfare.
Right.
And so I had worked with a lot of wonderful women, and Lena was sort of a compilation of.
So that's where it comes from. I see.
Well, I think that, and you're internalizing, your own humanness, and your own humanity, and the fact that it was very tricky to find her voice because I didn't want her to look like she was weak, and I didn't want her to look like she was a man.
Mm-hmm.
So it took, I don't know how many times I rewrote and rewrote the first chapter that she ever appears in, but I know that it took me like 3 weeks of throwing writing, throwing it out, writing, throwing it out. And then finally I realized who she was and went from there.
Would you say that you're a better writer than you are somebody speaking in front of people? I mean, I'm wondering how you do with bookstore signings. I mean, are you as open as you are as a writer? Do you know what I'm asking?
I'm getting better at it, but...
I mean, you seem very shy. You seem like a shyer kind of guy, but just talking to you, I mean, I know you, I can talk to you, and you're a fascinating guy to talk to, but I'm thinking you're better at expressing it on the page. Is that true?
Yes.
You didn't even hesitate saying that one.
No, I don't. I'm getting better at the signings. For City of Fire, things were kind of, scary.
What are you scared of?
Oh, I don't know.
Is it just? I mean, I remember when I did. I hosted a trivia thing between Lisa Scottolini and Harlan Coben, who weren't as big then as they are now. And I was scared to death. I'm up in front of all these people, and I'm thinking, what am I going to do? I could make a total idiot out of myself. And I think of that, maybe that's what's going through your mind, am I going to make an idiot out of myself? But, it's that fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
What it's going to be like. I mean, what's it going to be like speaking in front of people? I was scared to death.
Oh, yeah, no, that's not my favorite thing to do. But the signing part, now the stores, I really enjoy. And I really enjoy meeting with book clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing that in person, but also via Skype. And it's been great.
And I guess a lot of writers are shy in some way. I mean, that's why it's such a pleasure to do what I do, because I love talking to writers. I get into their minds. I mean, I ask them the questions. I mean, I have writers say to me, I've never been asked that question before, and I love it. I love when I can think of a question that I've never asked them before.
Right.
And you hear it in their voice, and like, wow, that's an interesting question. Thank you for that. They don't say that, but that's what they're implying by how they answer it. So, I mean, you're an interesting man. I mean, I've talked to you in person at the bookstore, and you're just interesting to hear everything you have to say. I love the way your mind works, and I think to myself, well, I'd love to see what's in his mind when he's writing these books. I mean, and it's not like they're disturbing in a sick kind of way or anything. Some authors we read, and I think you know what I'm talking about. You wonder how sick their mind must really be when they write these books. Some twisted stuff. I mean, even Thomas Harris, there's some really twisted stuff in his books.
Well, I wouldn't include him, but I think there are a bunch of there are a lot of writers who rely on bloodlust, and that's something you want to try to avoid. But in Harris's case, it is mega violent, but I believe the themes are so strong to his stories that so much of what he's doing is metaphor in order to do his theme. And he's one of my all-time favorite writers. And if there's any writer that I've been influenced by, Michael Connelly always says, you write what you like to read. And I agree with him 100%.
Mm.
Harris is one of my, he's on my short list of
I don't know how you can read the book Hannibal and not be totally disturbed. That book disturbed me so badly. I didn't know if I was ever going to be the same after I read that book.
Oh no, I would only include Red Dragon and Silence of the Lambs.
Really?
Yeah, no, well, I would stop after that point.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, so you haven't even read Hannibal?
I did read it.
Oh, you did? Okay. I don't know why, but that book, there's some really, really, really gruesome scenes in that book that really
sure are
almost did me in. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I mean, when I think about, but you know what? There's something about his writing that I can't stop reading it.
I know, he's great.
And just I feel that way about your books, but your books are never gruesome. So you never really get all that gruesome in your books. So you do that intentionally?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary in my stories. And one of the things I think about Murder Season is that it's the horror is the circumstance. My books are never about you know, sort of the murder. It's the horror of the circumstance, and I want you to feel for the person that is involved in the circumstance. And to flesh out the horror would not, you know...
Mm-hmm. Now you're talking about Lena as well as the victims.
Oh, yeah, as well as all of the victims.
Right.
You know, I mean, my stories generally have a handful of victims. You know, and some, mm-hmm. and then another handful that are just emotionally scarred.
So, and that brings to mind the term multi-layered, which your book. I think. Do you think your books are multi-layered?
Definitely.
But and that's intentional. And that's fun. But is it also more difficult to do? It's got to be more difficult to do than your regular.
I think it is. Yeah, and I don't think there are many people who do it or can do it.
I mean, you've got writers who write, you know, they write the same kind of book every time, in that you pretty much know where what's going to happen, not all the way, but and that those kind of things bother me. I want to be challenged. I want to open a book up and not know from beginning to end what's going to happen, not be able to guess anything. I have people tell me they can guess books on page 30. I knew who the killer was right away.
Well, when I hear that. And I heard that once, and I knew right away that the person was not being truthful.
Oh, really?
Because there's no way to tell one of my endings. It's not there. Do you know what I mean?
Even though you admit you leave clues along the way.
I leave possibilities.
Oh, okay.
Okay, there's
not really clues, possibilities.
That's right. In other words, it's when you get to it, It's not like, you know, it you go, oh my God, you know, but the
I still see the scene. I still see that the ending of the book in my head, and I will see it for a while, and it's an amazing scene. It really is. And all I can say is the people who haven't read it, wait till you get to the scene. So
that was my favorite. Yep. That was the reason I wrote it, and you know that I knew the ending from because of the first chapter.
That's fascinating. I mean, I think about that, and you knew that ending, and the whole book was leading up to that. So that's really cool. I mean, that's just as a reader, it doesn't get much better than that for me. I mean, that's what I love.
I'm glad.
And I know everybody else who reads it is going to love that too. Boy, we've run out of time. We've been talking for almost an hour, and it's just been a wonderful time. I every time I talk to you, it's more interesting.
I can't wait to get down to the store, and you know, I hope you'll be there when I do the travel.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It'll be the afternoon.
Right. It's just an enjoyable experience. And the book, again, it's called Murder Season by Robert Ellis, and you have to read this book, you really do. It's published by Minotaur Books. It's in all your bookstores. It's an e-book, and you can get an e-book of The Dead Room, and I really suggest you read that, too, because that's a tremendous book. I really suggest you read all of his books. So thank you so much, Robert.
Hey, David. Thanks so much for doing this.
This has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.